Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the January 31st, 2011 podcast of The A Word. And I am one of your hosts, Glenn Watson, known on YouTube as All Babies Are Atheists.
And I'm your other host, Kate Farr, known as Bionic Dance on YouTube.
Okay, let's get through the preamble part of the program. How have you been?
Well, you know, life has been kind of on the interesting side, but mostly in a good way. I've been dealing with some seasonal affective disorders, mostly curing them, so that's good. I don't know. I mean, I'm finding a bit more success on YouTube. Things are all right. How about yourself?
I'm also finding success. Success in the most odd way. I've had myself, for some people who are not familiar with YouTube, I've had myself a troll, which is someone who feeds off of making things miserable for you by coming and attacking you, attacking the things that you say, and then hopefully watching a negative reaction. I mean, he's definitely taken it over the top. I'm not going to get into details at this point. It'll take up the entire show. But the fact was is that I put out a plea for help from my subscribers. It was moved across the YouTube stratosphere. And next thing you know, I get like 200-300 subscriptions in the period of about 2 days, which for me is phenomenal.
I've actually been dealing with some kind of trollish issues myself lately. This is something I haven't told Glenn about yet, so this will be completely news to him. But there's a certain user you and I are both familiar with. His initials are WA, you know who I mean.
I do.
Who seems to have organized a theist troll army to try to get my attention long after I've told them I'm done dealing with them. They've been posting mirrors of the same video as responses on my channel, and I'm just sitting here thinking, these guys have to get a clue that I was done talking to them a while back because they were completely intractable, did not listen to logic, reason, or evidence, and I'm just done with them.
I am actually aware of that because I've seen the one who has taken a name of a famous South American activist. You'll know what I mean. The one who's actually made the videos. Che, and has made mirrors of this, and it's basically on another stupid old argument that we've had, and we've discussed this on at least two of our podcasts about the fact that there are certain words that don't change their meaning dependent on what other people think, especially Latin and Greek words. They're used in science for a reason. They're not up for interpretation. The word theos, the word a, when you put them together, do not change meaning over time. You're not going to come back 50 years from now and find out that atheist means a cup of coffee. It stays solid. They're using the word lady as their main argument for why atheist can mean whatever they want it to, and theists in particular. And that lady used to mean, I believe it was like a wash lady or something, or a wash purse, somebody who washes.
So I thought it was someone, a kneader of dough.
Oh, a kneader of dough. It was an old English word. It was a bastardization of the word, and they took it to meaning what we do now over a transformation over a couple of centuries. But the fact is that that's because English is a transformative language. It's borrowed from many other languages, including Germanic, from the Nordic different languages, from Latin, French, from many dead languages at this point. But that's what the nature of that language is. There are certain languages that just don't change over time. Latin and Greek are two of them. That's why we use them for science. That's why an appendix, you know, an appendectomy will never mean putting an appendix in. It always is an ectomy, means you remove it. Appendix means an attachment or an addendum. That's why they use those words. There's certain times that you use Latin or Greek to use technical reference so that you don't end up with these kind of things.
Right, and atheism or atheist is a technical term. Pretty much by definition, that's what it is. And it's supposed to be descriptive. Now, it's true that the word has been co-opted by religious groups that want to make it like almost not exactly the same as an anti-theist, but that's kind of the way they insist on using it, that apparently non-belief has to be explicit and direct. It has to be rejection of religion to be considered atheism, to be not theism. And I disagree. Most of the atheists I know completely disagree. But these people will not listen to reason, and they will not shut the heck up. And they've been trying to badger me into giving them, I don't want to give them even this much attention, but it is something that's been happening recently. And I've just basically taken to blocking them when they post another response, when they post another mirror, because I'm like, look, guys, I tried to give you the hint. I tried to give you the message. I tried to tell you, but now you're pushing me too far. And I hate to do it. I hate to block people off my channel. But, you know, I mean, because I do believe in free speech. I think most atheists do. But when they start making nuisances of themselves and they start becoming petty annoyances that you just don't want to deal with, and you have a channel of nearly 9,000 people, you pretty much have to take some extreme steps after all. I know Coughlin, Richard Coughlin, another prominent YouTuber, will block people for much less. And he still has tons of subscribers. He makes great videos. So, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily see myself as trumping on my principles by blocking them, even though some part of me does get a twinge when I do it, I have to admit.
If you look at the history of what you've done, you've given them airtime. You have responded to them in several videos. You have explained your point, and they still refuse to listen. At that point, debate's over. You have said, this is my opinion. They've said, I don't agree. Here's my opinion. It's done. You can only spend so much time.
Their voice. Yeah. It's true.
You've spent enough time on that particular thing. Semantics is the last thing that an active atheist on YouTube needs to deal with. Once you've given your definition, this is what I see. When they start playing with it and they just twiddle with it, and that's all they're doing is just basically trying to make you fit their universe, it's time to say goodbye.
Well, I don't even know what their purpose is. I mean, in the end, even if they change the definition of a word, what they're not going to end up doing is changing my position.
Yeah.
They're only going to change how I describe it.
Yeah.
And I don't see what the point of that is. I mean, I'm still going to be someone who does not believe in God due to a lack of evidence, and who could change her mind in the event that evidence were presented to me. But, you know, they seem to think that somehow, including under the banner of atheism, all those who have no belief in a deity for whatever reason is somehow anathema to them. And I don't understand the objection. I really don't.
I think they want you to fit their idea that you must look at the evidence and decide, I don't like it. That makes them feel better, because then they say, well, you've rejected God. Now you're going to go to hell. Somebody who's completely ignorant of the facts is still an atheist. I mean, even if we change that to non-theist, then they'll decide to change non-theist as meaning someone who's looked at the facts and turned again. They want anyone who doesn't believe in God to be some sort of unnatural or in some way blasphemous to their beliefs. And if you don't, somehow that gives you an innocence that they don't like.
I have gotten the impression that what they really want is to have someone that takes an explicit position to argue against. That they want the word atheist to mean someone who has done exactly the opposite of a theist, which is they believe, we don't believe, or we disbelieve, rather than just not believing. And that they want those two terms to be exact polar opposites. The problem is that they're not. The syllable A does negate, but it doesn't imply explicit negation. I mean, you know, they aren't happy with the idea of a strong atheist and a weak atheist, you know, an explicit atheist and an implied atheist, I suppose. They're not comfortable with that. They want atheism to just be strong atheism only.
Yeah.
And even when presented with these definitions, they won't compromise. They won't back down. They won't bend on this one. They won't say, okay, fine, strong atheist, weak atheist. Strong atheist is what we want atheist to mean. We understand. We'll just use that term. It means what we're trying to say. Let's run with it. They can't do that. It's somehow become a war of definitions rather than actually addressing the point.
Well, yeah. Well, their point is so shaky when it comes to their belief in their God, as we know that this is much easier for them to play with. And it's time to stop. Get out of the playground. Let them play with their ball by themselves and get on to more important things, which is what we've got today. We've got some. They're not as topical as they were when we originally had them, mind you, but they're still valid.
Now, let me just say that I would like this to be the last time I address those idiots. We're done.
I would like that, too. It gets rather frustrating.
So, What topics do we have coming up here?
Well, we have something that's especially in the news in the United States, where you live, is Jared Lee Loughner.
Ah, yes, him. The Arizona shooter guy.
Well, as we might want to do, as the press does, the alleged. Even though we've got eyewitnesses and photographs, we have to be careful in legal terms to say he is still, until the court of law decides so, he is still alleged.
Can we settle on unconvicted?
Unconvicted would be fine for me. I know that if we had a legal department, they would be screaming at us right now, waving flags and saying alleged, because there may be a time, as we know with O.J. Simpson, even though he even wrote a book saying, if I did it, I mean, we all knew he did it, but until the actual court of law, and I mean, in a civil court, he was found guilty, but the fact is that a criminal court said, we don't buy it. So, I mean, this person, I really doubt in this case. I mean, he killed a U.S. judge. That is a bad thing to do. And I mean a child, again, is a bad thing to do, but for a lot of people, they see on a legal terms, you don't kill a judge. It's
yeah, and let's face it, he also managed to plug in the head a member of Congress. It gave her permanent brain damage, and despite the fact that her recovery has been described by many as miraculous, and I do hope they mean that in a euphemistic way, but still amazing.
Oh, yeah, I'd go with amazing.
So that doesn't negate the fact that he shot her in the head.
Yeah.
So with all of the deaths and the injuries that have resulted from his attack, yeah, the guy is, I think, legitimately describable as scum.
Oh, absolutely. Well, at least severely disturbed.
Well, yes, without a doubt. And I've actually often said, you know, I wonder what would happen if they caught one of these mass killer types alive, because most of them turn the guns on themselves at the end of their rampage. When they realize, oh, I'm about to lose, I'm going to shoot myself. Most of the time, we don't get them alive. And now we have one, and it makes me deeply curious. I mean, I don't know, maybe I haven't been looking at the news as much as other people, but I have yet to see actual footage of this guy. I've only seen photos. So I have no idea what he's like as far as his presentation is public face, and yes. I'm very curious.
I think they've been very careful because that can be often seen as morbid curiosity, and for many news groups, they'd much prefer not to show that. And I'm rather thankful. I mean, this person did a horrendous thing, unconvicted, of course, as he is, but he opened fire on Giffords plus the bystanders. He killed 6 people, and 13 other people were injured, some very critically and some mildly, but there was and another person was actually injured leaving the scene, I guess probably tripped and hurt themselves running. But the fact was is that, you know, it was far worse than it had to be. Thankfully, some people actually stepped up and took some action and stopped him before he could have continued on and finished the job.
Well, I mean, maybe it is morbid curiosity, but at the same time, I think it's pertinent information. I mean, if we're going to stop somebody like this before they even ever get started, we have to know what they're like inside their head. We have to be able to point at this person and identify them. I mean, how often have you heard someone describe a mass murderer next to whom they've lived for years going, well, you know, he was really quiet and he seemed like a perfectly ordinary guy. And it's like, okay, I want to see for myself what one of these whack jobs is like. So rarely do we catch one alive. I want to see an interview, if only to be able to sort of, I mean, not necessarily out of morbid curiosity, but just more like clinical curiosity, honestly. Sure. I'd love to be able to if not actually empathize, because that's a little scary, at least to understand in kind of a scientific sense. I mean, stopping one of these people is kind of important, I'd say.
Yeah.
And knowing his mindset is a part of that.
Yeah.
Well, and there's an aspect to his mindset that people talk about a lot, namely that they think he's an atheist.
That is. Well, I do know there is some video that's out there now when he was in college before they actually, I guess there was a YouTube video that he did that actually said that they were a bunch of ripoff artists. This was some sort of like little community art college he was in. But what it was is he went and did a YouTube video saying they were a bunch of ripoff artists and they let him go. But there was a video that he did on campus where he went around and insulted people and ranted to the point where they actually escorted him off campus. And it does show some of the pathology of what he's like. And I do know that, for example, like in the in other school shootings, there have been video that was there. It was used as evidence in the court, so they actually kept it from the public. But now, if you go online to a lot of the more famous shootings that have been out there, they do have video available. And for someone who either wants to understand the pathology or out of morbid curiosity, which I think is more likely for most people, it is available. And this will be available once he's been convicted and put away. I don't believe he can be executed. I'm not sure at this point where he is, but I do know that he will definitely be put away for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I mean, it seems likely that the defense will claim insanity and have him locked away in some sort of institution rather than having him in prison or executed or both. Well, I mean, well, it would have to be both. But I mean, yeah, it seems to me that they will almost undoubtedly try to say this guy is not well.
Actually, curiously, they haven't used that. He pleaded not guilty, not guilty by personal mental defect or, you know, temporary insanity. They used just the not guilty defense, probably by his wishes. I believe that he's one of these type of people who does not want to have an insane label on him. Basically, this was all done premeditated. There's a lot of evidence out there that he left notes for people. He did on his MySpace. He has a close-up of him, his handgun, sitting atop of a document titled United States History. He leaves a message to his people, I believe it was on Twitter, saying, goodbye friends. Oh, it's on MySpace. He says, goodbye friends, please don't be mad at me. The literacy rate is below 5%. I haven't talked to one person who is literate. I want to make it out alive. The longest war in history of the United States, goodbye. I'm saddened with the current currency and job employment. I had a bully at school. Thank you. P.S. Plead the fifth.
I really don't see how he can claim not guilty by any reason other than insanity. I mean, that alone seems to me to be insane. I mean, they caught the guy at the scene. He had the weapon in his hands. How much more reason do they need to convict him?
Oh, absolutely. And, a lot of the things he did were more like a Tea Party member than some, which usually is not atheist in nature. They tend to be rather on the, a personal religious, but definitely not an atheist. I've got the Wikipedia page up with me, but he would, he had voted twice as an independent in U.S. elections, and he skipped the last one. But he did a lot of things. He was definitely had a lot of trouble with drugs, especially salvia, which is a legally obtainable, natural and legal hallucinogen. He spent a lot of time smoking marijuana, using psychedelic mushrooms and LSD, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, and it's for reasons like that, as well as his apparent atheism, that a lot of people on the right, we're talking Glenn Beck here, mm-hmm. have tried to paint him as being a left-wing communist. They're like, a right-winger would not smoke marijuana. That's not what right-wingers do, apparently. The marijuana is a left-wing drug. It's a hippie drug, and therefore he had to be a left-winger. And, the atheism to them is probably just icing on the cake. Yes. But I have to ask, was he motivated by his atheism to do this? If he was an atheist, did that have anything to do with deciding a rampage like this was okay? I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but when I think of the fact that there is almost certainly no afterlife, I've seen no evidence that there is one, no reason to believe in one, value life, I find life to be very precious, because once it's gone and there's no getting it back. An atheist, at least in principle, should find life to be very, very valuable, literally irreplaceable. And this guy, this Jared Loughner, he clearly didn't think that, because he went on this killing rampage. How much was his atheism a motivating factor in what he did? I think not at all.
Well, a lot of the things he did were definitely notably not something that you would expect from the average atheist. It has a moment in his school that one classmate had read a poem out loud. She had had an abortion. She read a poem out loud about having it. He laughed at her and likened her to a terrorist. Now, that sounds very similar to a Republican or Tea Party view, and a Christian view, that somebody's a terrorist who endorses or has an abortion. There is a group of atheists who are pro-life, but it's a fringe group at best. There's a lot of information here that's very conflicting. He didn't like Democrats. He thought they were fakes. He had had a long-standing dislike for Gabrielle Giffords, describing her and the Democratic Party as fakes. He definitely had a lot of conflicting views. So, but even if he did, a lot of the things seem to be, he believed in a new world order, he believed in conspiracy theories. He actually is noted here as thinking that NASA had faked the space flights, that government was using mind control to brainwash people by controlling the grammar we use. He was definitely seemed to be a grammar Nazi. And he was a member of an online conspiracy theory message board called Above Top Secret. A lot of people did not like his posts. He seemed to be rather even over the top for them. He also really liked Zeitgeist, the movie.
I see. Wow. Okay, yeah, so he does not strike me as being the kind of pot-smoking, left-wing, atheist nut bar that the right wing is trying to paint him as. Certainly that's not the sole defining characteristic of his personality, as far as I can tell. His character seems to be rather more to the right than some of the people on the right, like Fox News types, would like us to believe. They want him to believe that he's just like those of us who are much more left-wing, much more free-thinking types than they are.
Right.
That certainly seems to be the goal here. And if you look at the facts, they don't fit the painting that they're trying to make of this guy.
Right. Yeah, it seemed like he's a lot of things, but they seem to wobble back and forth. I think he was definitely confused on his religious convictions, but there's nothing that specifically calls him an atheist. And even if he was, he definitely doesn't fit what we would consider the profile of at least a skeptic or a free-thinking atheist, and certainly not a humanist.
He certainly doesn't appear to have been motivated by a lack of belief in God for any of this.
No, not at all. So, I mean, I would really like to see the right stop trying to make him the poster boy for atheist insanity. In many ways, he definitely does not fit what we would consider the profile of the average atheist. And I'm really hoping, as progressively things show up in court, that we find evidence that it turns out that he has religious views. They just really differ from the average Christian.
Well, I mean, he's not necessarily a Christian, even if he has religious views. I mean, there are so many other religions out there that, I mean, it may turn out that he's like some sort of wacky denomination of Jewish, or I doubt he's a Muslim, but I mean, maybe he's got some weird New Agey thing going on where he believes in reincarnation or something, or maybe he's a Wiccan. How do I know? You know, I mean, I don't, but it may be that we'll find out that he's something non-Christian, yet still a spiritual kind of person, shall we say.
Right. Well, literally and figuratively, the jury is out.
Yes.
Right now, there is no evidence. It's going to be very interesting, and I know that both sides of this are going to be watching this carefully, because if it turns out that he avows himself to the atheist ideas in court, it's going to at least sour people's view on us. Not fairly, but it will.
Yeah. It's weird how public opinion about atheists seems to be very, well, divided is the wrong word. It seems to be tempestuous in many ways. I mean, there are definitely people out there who want to paint atheists as villains. When you look at how people try to describe, say, for example, the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, as being an atheist regime.
Yes.
And as far as I'm concerned, there's no such thing as an atheist regime. There may be a government out there that has atheism as part of its platform, as part of its makeup, but it's not like a theocracy where the whole point of the thing is to promote non-religion.
No.
I mean, that just doesn't exist. There's no such thing as an atheist regime in those terms. There's just regimes that include atheism. I mean, you wouldn't say that freedom of the press is the single defining characteristic of the United States. It's not like we go into foreign countries when people are clamped down more when they're reporters, and free them up so that they can have greater freedom of the newspapers and television. It doesn't work like that.
No.
The United States is not a newspaper regime.
No.
Or a free speech regime. And, you know, these communist republics are not atheist regimes. And I hate it when theists try to paint them as such. It
No.
just, it doesn't make any sense at all, except that they're trying to paint them in a negative light and say, see how bad atheists are? Look at how these regimes were run. They're awful, they're terrible, and they were atheists. Ha ha, gotcha.
And the thing is that they all start out with the ideas of Marxism, the idea that the worker class people have been kept down, and part of the reason they were kept down is by religious means. That, and it's true that religion is used to basically subjugate, to placate the average person. They like, even Buddhism, they say, if you're very good to the people who oppress you and you get hurt a lot in this life, next life you're going to be the person who can get to hurt other people. Basically, that you move up the scale in society, that the next time you come back as a baby, it's going to be in a better place. And it's ludicrous. And with Marxism was converted very quickly in almost every communist regime that we've seen. Cuba, China, North Korea, the Soviet Union in general, that what it did, it became a cult of personality. That if you look around, you saw the icons of their god, Stalin. You saw huge posters of Lenin and Stalin in every venue. And you don't go and take an atheist leader and stick him in a glass cage and charge admission to go and see him every day for 90 years if he's not some kind of a group leader, some sort of a cult personality.
Yeah, I mean, it is true that they seem to have replaced religion with this sort of personality thing. It in many ways it feels kind of like 1984. I'm sure 1984 was based on that. You know, the Orwell book 1984. I mean, they had that one guy, I forget his name, but he was like, they would yell and scream at him in the Daily Rage. The Emmanuel Goldstein, I think his name was. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they would replace religion with another kind of focus, but it's still, it has a religious flavor, let's just put it that way. And I'm sure that these communist republics were pretty much doing the same thing. It certainly looks like it, that they replaced God worship with person worship.
It certainly is. I mean, in almost every case, and it's just like how religions are built in the first place, is you have a leader looking around saying, look, the people are starving and they're ticked off and they want to take me down. How do I placate them? How do I make them feel better about their bad conditions without giving them something? Because it's led on greed. The top of the level of all the communist parties, the Politburo, the people in charge, were rich. They went on luxurious vacations to the places that they had taken from other people, huge villas out in the middle of beautiful area, and they would eat the best food, and they never had to worry about anything, and the rest of the people were downtrodden. They would give them something to placate them. They'd say, look at our fabulous leader and what wonderful things he's done. And yes, 1984 was built on the idea of the 1948 Soviet regime. It was just a reversal of the last two numbers. The fact was is that it was a perfect example of how they tried to keep people calmed down, and they gave them double speak. They said, basically, the Russians did that. They would say, look at how wonderful we have it. You only have to wait 2 weeks for your toilet paper and things like that. And people, most of them did not buy into it, as we've seen now. Even a separate, not communist group like the Cambodians, Pol Pot, one of the most vicious murderers of all time. There was a cult of education. Basically, he despised education. Somebody like myself who wears glasses would have been executed on the spot. They actually took the names of people from places that manufactured eyeglasses and executed them because Pol Pot felt that somebody with glasses read. And if you read and you were educated, you were a danger to his society. So it became a cult of anti-education. So, I mean, they always try to fill one thing in with another. And to call it atheist, it's only one aspect, and they bastardized and distorted it to the point where it was unrecognizable.
Yeah, well, I mean, the question I would have to ask is, having described these socialist or communist republics that we just talked about, how much of that sounds like it was motivated by lacking a belief in God? Because I can't hear a damn thing in there that sounds even remotely like lacking a belief in God was necessary for any of it. And it just seems to me that these religious people are trying to vilify, to villainize being an atheist. They want to make lacking belief in God look like it leads to dictatorships and despotism and all of these horrible things. It's got nothing to do with it. It's incidental. Oh, yeah. You know, it's as incidental as freedom of the press is incidental to a democracy. I mean, yeah, we like it. Yeah, it's an integral part of our country, our makeup, our political system. But it's not the defining characteristic, not nearly as much as these religious people try to paint it. Not remotely.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it does come down to, in many cases, like, is atheism as a definition enough? You know, is it a definition that is enough to describe the people who are atheists? Or do we need something more? Because we've seen how people have played with the word and try to make it out to vilify it. We've seen how people take the whole idea of having no God and make it seem like a terrible, evil thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, is that atheism does not come with dogma. It pretty much can't. Atheism is the answer to exactly one question. Do you believe in a God? Answer, no. And that doesn't come with extra baggage. Sure, it does mean that there are a lot of theist beliefs or theist precepts that we then also don't believe in because they don't come with it. But atheism otherwise has no content. Whereas theism tends to. I've certainly had a few people comment on my videos saying, well, you can believe in a God, but not in, like, theology. You can believe in a God and not have a whole lot of dogma. You can just go magic man up in the sky, end of story. But for the most part, when someone is a theist, it comes with a double-wide buttload of dogma.
Oh, yeah.
And that has an effect on how you live your life. And the fact that atheism lacks that is something I find theists having a very difficult time wrapping their heads around. They seem to think that atheism comes with the same amount of baggage. Like, there's got to be some atheist book out there, whether it's The God Delusion or Darwin's Somewhere, there's an atheist holy book, according to these people. Mm. And it just doesn't work like that. They don't get it. They can't seem to relate to it. But, you know, atheism has no content, none. It doesn't come with all that baggage.
Well, I think it makes them extraordinarily nervous when somebody can have their morals from their own decisions and judgments of reality. They think that their morals, the only reason that they have any morals at all is because their invisible God in the sky gave it to somebody back in the Bronze Age. And the fact is that it frightens them that if they had to stop thinking, stop listening to the Bible and actually thinking for themselves, it's a terrifying thought for a lot of people. They would much prefer to flip on the autopilot and continue on without ever making a thought and say, the reason that I think that X is wrong is because God said so. And they say, well, how could you possibly have morality? God never told you anything. You ignore what God said. And if I go back to them and says, well, God tells you homosexuality is bad. We know by what we know that it's fine, it's part of nature, it's actually a defense mechanism. So how can you think it's right?
Well, I have actually questioned directly. In fact, I did this last night. I was on a blog TV with a guy known on YouTube as Together for Peace. And at a certain point, we got onto the discussion of atheist morality versus theist morality, or even just God's commandments about how to live or whatever. And I asked him directly, I said, why is it that God says it, therefore it's so? Why should we follow what God says? How is it not God's opinion that we should be this kind of moral instead of that kind of moral? And he had no answer for me, none. He did the verbal equivalent of waving his arms eloquently. And I've never had a straight up answer from a religious person. I've never heard them say that God is right because, you know, they've never addressed the fact that if God hands us a moral code, that that moral code is God's opinion. They've never addressed that, and I can't seem to get them to. It just, it doesn't seem to compute in their brains. They, again, can only do the eloquent hand-waving thing. Oh, it's really bizarre and deeply annoying because you can't have this conversation with them. They just, they shy away from it.
There is a philosophical dilemma. I cannot remember the name specific. It's a Greek dilemma that goes before Christianity. And what it is that if a God puts all the morals out, if everything that the God says is moral, then it must all be good, right? Well, then they say, okay, well, God command you to kill an entire race of people, an entire group, genocide, basically, and he says it's good. Is it good? Well, if he says it's good, it's good. Where do you get that information? Well, if you have to just listen to everything and just swallow it all without thinking about it. I mean, there is definitely a dilemma. God, obviously, if you look at the Bible, the Quran, yeah, you know, even like East Indian mythology, things like basically God's command some of the most horrendous things to be done. And to just sit there and say it's good because he says so. It's definitely a lack of logic or even just thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we were to say to someone, how could you tell that God is good? If we were to ask them that, they would just, again, eloquent hand-waving. He just is. He is God. So how would you tell? I mean, if it turned out that God actually is evil in some way, I mean, stipulating that good and evil do exist, I mean, I'm not sure I believe that, but that's a different discussion for another time. Mm-hmm. If it turned out that God was a bad guy, a villain, how would you tell if you are taking everything that God says and assuming that it's good, assuming you should follow it without questioning it at all? As far as I'm concerned, skepticism may well be humanity's greatest virtue, and these people are running from it with their noses held and their eyes closed.
And it's one of their commandments. They always tell you, you can't question God. To do so is bad.
How faith was ever described as a virtue is a mystery to me, although I understand the motivation behind it, because if people start questioning, well, they're going to realize you're full of it.
And they're going to walk away in droves, because the fact is when you see the Old Testament is full to the brim of God saying, I command you to take these entire peoples and kill them all. Oh, except for the virgin girls, because you can rape them and take them into slavery. But the fact is that, and God says that, and no one's allowed to question it. God obviously, and I've actually had people reply to me in videos saying, you don't understand what was behind it. These people were bad to the Israelites. Well, killing every man, woman, and child, including those who didn't do bad things to you, that's a bad thing. That's morally, in my opinion, and most people's, wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly object to that. If someone had not actually themselves perpetrated a wrong or some harm against somebody else, I mean, let's ride right past the fact that harm is in and of itself a subjective definition. But, you know, if they committed a harm that most humans would agree is a harm, I would say that they have done a very bad thing, that they should be stopped, that they are bad people. I mean, I'm quite willing to say that, stipulating, of course, that bad and harm are normative values, but still, I'm quite willing to own that conclusion.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of times in the Bible, it wasn't just that these people had done some supposed harm to the Israelites, they were just living on their land. And that was that they said, well, let's do the logic for you, they'll tell me. And it says, well, God gave the Israelites this land. These people had the nerve to move in on this land not knowing what God's commandment was. That means we can kill them all. That's God's commandment. And it's definitely amoral to most people. But because God said it was right, we can't even question it. It's ridiculous.
But what I have to ask, if they're going to make an excuse like that, isn't everybody technically one of God's people? Didn't he build us all? I gotta ask you that one. And I'm sure they'd say, yeah, but they'd rejected God or followed a different God. A different God? How could there be a different God? Well, okay, a different religious path. Yeah, but aren't they still God's people, even if they are, I don't know, clueless or traitors or whatever? Don't you think he'd want to embrace them in some way instead of standing aloof? And they really never have satisfying answers to these questions. They just seem to take it as read, take it for granted, that these are the good people, these are the bad people, and never the twain shall meet, and they'll always be enemies. It's just really frustrating to have this conversation with people that don't seem to think in these critical ways.
Oh, absolutely. And this kind of brings us into a good segue into something that's, it's about 3 weeks old, but it's still very valid and relevant, is we could always ask the Westboro Baptist Church about something like this. They believe that their God is different than any other God, including anybody else who claims they're Christian. And something that they've been doing for a long time is protesting at funerals of especially fallen heroes of the present war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and saying that the reason that they're dead is because of transgressions against their God by the average American person, and Canadians and Australians and British, but the fact is that they seem to really hate America. These are the same group people that say God hates fags. You'll see they actually have a website stating that. And what they've been doing lately... Yeah, and this actually connects back to the Arizona shooting, in that right now they are picketing the funerals of a lot of these people who fell there, of the half a dozen people who actually were killed there. And one of them, of course, is what we would consider an innocent 9-year-old girl. Christina Taylor Green is her name.
And they do want to stand outside in front of her funeral screaming stuff while this family mourns their loss.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, it has actually resulted in a new law stipulating that they have to be, what is it, like 3 football fields away from any funeral or something?
Yes.
And technically, it's not directed at just the Westboro Baptist Church. I think it's all protests or all religious protests or something. I don't know the exact law, but it was basically to prevent the Westboro Baptist Church from interfering, from intruding.
Yes, and it's definitely a hot topic with civil rights discussion in the United States, because definitely one of the things that people hold very near and dear to them in the United States is the freedom of expression, the freedom of speech. And a lot of people believe that this does not only stop Westboro Baptist Church, but violates a lot of other people's right to be able to speak freely anywhere they want.
Well, you know, I'm not entirely certain that I, at least personally, agree with the notion of being able to speak wherever you want. I mean, I do believe in the freedom of the press, for example. I mean, if you want to put any old damn thing you want on television, as far as news or commentary or political views or religious views, you go right ahead. But one thing you can do with a television set is turn it off. And another thing you can do is change the channel. It's not forced upon you, but at least it's out there if you want it. They're not being censored. They're just editable by the people that are watching the final product. I mean, you are not forced to endure whatever it is they want to force upon you. Now, with a protest at a funeral, they kind of are forcing it on you. And that's where I start to see kind of a gray area. That's where I start to say, you know, if these people want to have their say, let them. But do they really have the right to intrude? I mean, if they're still out there and you can seek them out and they're in an easily accessible place, I don't think their freedom of speech has actually been abridged, personally.
Well, you can take that with a different example of, for example, the G20 economic meeting that has been had year after year. When it ended up in the United States and in Canada, they created large, what they call buffer zones, these fenced off areas around where the meeting was taking place that were in miles in diameter, where you were not allowed to actually speak anything within that perimeter. Now, they used it, of course, under the premise that it was a terrorist protection. But what it was to make sure that nobody who was involved in the meeting could see that people were offended by them meeting. Basically, that these rich, affluent countries are meeting about how to be richer while poor countries are getting poorer. And in that way, I think that it's a great violation of these people's ability. They want to express it to these members of the community, these G20 members, and they can't. Now, they can if they protest 20 miles away, there's no way that any of these members are going to even know about it. As we well know, a lot of these politicians don't even open a newspaper ever.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, the Westboro Baptist Church's activities have been well advertised. It's not like you can avoid knowing that they're going to have this protest. I mean, it's been in the news. They've certainly made a big stink about it. And so it's not like you can necessarily be ignorant. And again, it's not like anybody is being prevented from seeing their message. They're just being prevented from intruding it, from forcing it on people. Because I think you have freedom of speech. I don't think you have freedom of intrusion, if you see the difference. And I realize it's subtle, and I realize it gets us into some very gray and even ugly zones for some people. But I really don't think that freedom of speech means that you can force it on people. I just think it means that you can't be prevented from saying it.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely a hot topic that has been discussed since shortly after the First Amendment was established. You know, we're talking like pretty much 250 years of discussion on what does this right mean? How far does it go? How do you express your rights under this? And one of the things is there's actually already safeguards that have been put up by a lot of people showing that they have the right also to express themselves. And one of them is a group in Tucson, Arizona called Angel Wings. Was one of the things that CNN reported. This funeral happened about 3 weeks ago. So, I mean, it is come and gone. But one of the things that did, there was a group called Angel Wings that wore these large white angel wings to protect the mourners from the picketers. They made a human chain around the event and actually shielded them. Now, this has happened before with soldiers, and I'm quite sure you're aware that motorcycle gangs have actually joined up in many of these Westboro Baptist Church meetings and made a human blockade to make sure that Westboro could not be seen by people entering or leaving a funeral of a fallen soldier. They have taken their time and established their right to speak by making a passive human chain that I think that is a great way to express your freedom of speech, that both sides have now been equaled out, that basically they've both had their right to say what they had to say without having to add what may be seen by many people as draconian measures that may violate somebody's speech.
I suppose. I mean, I don't think these are draconian measures, personally. I think the notion that they can have their say, and if anyone wants to, they can seek them out, I think that satisfies at least the letter of freedom of speech, personally. I mean, as long as they're not being told 100% to shut up, that they cannot put their message out there, or even just that their message is being made extra hard to get to, to access. I think that they are actually being given their First Amendment rights still. I think that the fact that a chain like this is necessary, that people with giant angel wings to block them out is necessary, is something that shows that they are being intrusive, that they are violating people's right to not hear it. Because I don't think freedom of speech, again, means that hearing the speech is required for all people. I really don't. I don't think you should be able to force your speech on people. And again, like I say, that's a blurry line. But I also have some good news. Mm-hmm. Just this moment, my YouTube channel hit 8,600 subscribers.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I am definitely far behind you, but probably by the time I get home from work today, I'll be at 2,000. I'm within about 15 people away, so definitely any amount of subscribers are both amazing and spectacular.
Well, I am looking forward to the big 10K. If any of you out there are YouTubers or blog TV fans, I am Bionic Dance in both places. And when I hit 10,000 subscribers, I plan to do the ever-popular Drunken Blog TV. So come one, come all when that happens. And if you're not subscribed to my channel, you totally should be. If you're not subscribed to Glenn, you also should be.
Well, that's always appreciated, definitely. One more topic on the Westboro Church is one of the things I can use as a comparison is, for example, say union protests of if they're kicked out because they're trying to form a union and they have to picket. Now, if you picket away from a business, the business will be allowed to do whatever they please with non-union employees. This is something that definitely one of the freedom of speech that has been struggled with by the courts back and forth. They will actually picket and attempt to picket in front of any truck that may come in to move equipment, to any employee who is what they call a scab or a non-union worker moving in and out of the plant. What use is it to have these kind of protests if they're, say, 15 blocks away from the plant that you're trying to protest.
You have a point. And I certainly think that if they're literally interfering with, say, a scab or a truck getting into the building, then they're probably in the wrong. I think they are right to get their message out there, to air their grievances, but I don't think they should necessarily be allowed to interfere physically. Now, I realize that a lot of people will argue against emotional appeals. And I do think that you can make a legitimate case saying that intruding upon mourning is inflicting emotional harm, where intruding upon a business is not. I mean, okay, maybe the CEO might start to feel a little bit guilty or a little bit annoyed, but it's not quite the same as a funeral. And I know making emotional appeals is usually not the best way to argue. It's usually considered like a logical fallacy. But the main objection to people protesting at a funeral is specifically because they're fucking with people's emotions, and we don't much care for that. I mean, let's face it, we have to face the reality that we are emotional creatures, like it or lump it, and this is something that's important to a lot of us. So I don't think you can completely ignore the emotional argument.
Well, we are emotional creatures. I mean, if we deny that, we deny a major portion of what makes a human human. So I think that's very important for us to keep in mind that, you know, think everything plays against our emotions. Otherwise, this planet would be a very different place. Maybe a better one, maybe a worse. You know, that's completely subjective. But I don't know. I think we'll have to have a show just specifically on this idea of expressing ourselves and the ability to. I mean, it's very important to an atheist. We've seen book burnings by Christians all the time. We've seen them trying to suppress someone's ability to express themselves in the written form and in verbal form, too. So, I mean, this is something that definitely, we're not going to solve it here. I mean, let's guarantee that. But the fact is I think speaking on something like this in a format like this is always going to be a good thing, regardless of your point of view.
Another topic to explore on that same vein is the notion that atheists are shrill, that atheists are you know, angry and even dogmatic at times. I mean, you hear that from theists a lot, that atheists are just really, really grumpy. And then when I look at the authors and pundits that they describe in this way, they seem like the most mild and scholarly people. And I'm not the first person to notice this, that the religious seem to be way overreacting to the way atheists express themselves, that they seem to be looking upon atheists as these venomous, angry people when many of them are clinically detached in many ways. You know, I mean, you look at how Richard Dawkins will speak in public, and oftentimes he just comes off like what he is, a lecturing professor. Mm. You know, I mean, okay, Christopher Hitchens can get a bit vitriolic, but usually in a very entertaining, acerbic way. But, I mean, we are not as shrill as some of those preachers that will stand up waving their book and screaming, well, maybe not screaming, but at least being vehement, you know, I have the answers and all that. So, you know, it's like, by comparison, the atheists are practically whispering. And more, I find myself unwilling to stand by and be Little Miss Mildpants trying to talk about this stuff. More and more, I find myself, I don't know, wanting to yell and scream just in my own videos. I hold it back, but at the same time, I find I can't be just this meek and mild, silent person. I can't do it.
Well, I mean, like, they're always, of course, going to look for the one who's the loudest in the group. It would be very bad for, like, somebody on his pulpit to say, look at this Richard Dawkins. He's the most reasonable, straightforward, and calm person. We hate him. I mean, they're going to go after somebody who really squeaks the loudest. And it's the same with, say, for example, anti-abortionists. If they don't get loud, they can be ignored. They have to pick it and say, you're killing people. Billions of people a year get killed. You know, they make large hyperbolic statements like that. They want to make it sound like we're murdering people, that we're making another Auschwitz. And if they're not loud, vitriolic, full of, you know, nasty, spiteful, fire and brimstone talk, they will get ignored by us. Because we just want to get along. So if they want to protest and say, we don't like what you're doing, they do it in a Richard Dawkins form of way, people are going to just walk away and go, meh, we don't care. But when they come out and they bring out pictures of fetuses and horrific tales that don't exist, of course we're going to hear it. And we're going to protest back. So they do the same thing with us. They say, look at that person. They're yelling at the top of their lungs and they're picking on our God. Like God couldn't protect himself. I mean, like if he is real, I'm sure he can strike people with lightning himself.
Also, I mean, a large part of it is that atheists were not treated very well for a very long time. If you were not a follower of a specific religion in certain countries, well, you risked torture and death. You know, I mean, we're talking burning at the stake kind of stuff here. You risk being accused of witchcraft because you're not with us. See, I got to be a Guinness, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so now that atheists feel free to speak out, all of a sudden our voices sound shrill to them because we're saying anything at all. They're just not used to it. They're used to having free reign, to having the stage all to themselves, to being the loudest voice in the room. And so anyone speaking up going, not sure I'm with you on that, Chief. They're like, yeah, you shut up. You're being too loud. You know, it's just like even the tiniest questioning sends them into a tizzy. It's bizarre, but that just seems to be the way it is.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like they use the analogy of the statue with feet of clay is one thing Christians love, is that you can't, if you build a statue with feet of clay, it's very easy to take down. We're sitting there chipping away at their feet and they're pissed off. And, you know, I guess if I believed in a God, I would be rather upset about it myself. But the fact is it's going to happen. I think we have what I consider the right point of view, that we're better placed without them. And there are, and also keep in mind too, that there are still a lot of countries where people have to hide their face and hide the fact that they're atheists. We've seen it on YouTube a lot of people who have to whisper and keep it under wraps. Even in the United States itself, we personally know a couple of people who have to be veiled in order to protect their career, protect their personal lives, or they could be very severely damaged.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough to live in Seattle where most people don't seem to give a flying fornication whether or not you're an atheist or a theist. I mean, seriously, I've been living here for a little more than 15 years now, and I have yet to encounter even the tiniest bit of religious bigotry. Most people just don't care that I'm an atheist. I mean, they hear me talk about my YouTube channel, and they're like, oh, that's very nice, Kate, pat, pat, run along now. Yeah, they don't quite understand the argument, or if you want, the fight that I'm in here on the internet. And I think a large part of that is because we do live on a very tolerant part of the country, on one of the coasts. I mean, the coasts tend to be much more open and free for whatever reason. So I can't really relate to those poor people who have had some sort of personal loss in their lives specifically due to their lack of faith. I can't relate to that. I'm glad I can't, frankly, because life's much more comfortable this way. But I do feel for them, even if I can't empathize, I do feel sorry for them. I wish they were not going through that kind of a trial.
Well, I think the more mainstream we make these, the more we communicate with people in venues like this, I think the more safe it makes it. Because once we break down a lot of these barriers and that they see that there is another point of view, eventually we will win. It may take us several generations. We will not be here, I think, to see a completely atheist society the way we want it to. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. Just because we aren't going to see the end results.
And I actually had to have that argument with some people last night as well when I was talking to Together for Peace. It actually came up about the whole objective versus subjective thing. And we had to I had to explain to them that you can never actually have objective knowledge because there will always be uncertainty. And they said, well, so why should you bother getting knowledge at all? I was like, because you can come pretty darn close. You can at least convince yourself to about 99.99% that you have hold of the facts, even if there's always that chance that you've misunderstood or that you've missed something or that you might just plain be wrong. You can still be very sure with a high degree of confidence. And so maybe we in our generation will not prevail on the atheism versus theism front. We may not, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't work towards it so that future generations can benefit from our work. Otherwise, they'll have to start from square one instead of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Meaning, you know, every journey begins with a single step. I forget who said that, but it's a good point.
I would love to be alive the day they put the tombstone up with the end date of religion religion 0 to 20, 120, or whatever it's going to be, and also philosophy as well, which I think it reinforces their wish fulfillment that you can just believe in something and make it real. And until that day, it's a struggle. And once we can lay down our picket signs and stop having to struggle, it's going to be a good thing. But I think that people like yourself, me, and other people that we deal with on YouTube and elsewhere, I think we're doing a very positive, very good thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're working towards getting to a society where people try to see reality for what it is, where they try to base their picture of the universe in their head on as many facts as possible. It's like Matt Dillahunty from The Atheist Experience is always talking about, you want to believe as many true things and as few false things as possible. I completely concur on that one. I completely agree. That is exactly what we want. Totally. And so I think we're going to get there someday. I mean, we may never stamp out religion completely, but we may marginalize it enough that it doesn't produce another Dark Ages.
Let's hope.
Yes.
And on that positive note, it's time to wrap up, ladies and gentlemen. One thing I would like to say we haven't said up to this point is about funding. And I hate to do this. It sounds very much like what we call e-begging, but it's for a good cause. Like, I personally pay out of pocket for our Podomatic, our site that allows you to freely pick up the A word. And it doesn't cost a lot. It's about $15 a month, but it is an expense out of pocket. And I wanted to just remind people that when you go onto the Podomatic site to pick up the A word, on the upper right hand corner of your screen when you're looking at the videos, there's a PayPal button. Now that is my PayPal button. If you click on that and even donate a dollar, a couple of you, it makes a difference in that it eases the burden on myself so that we can do this. And it also may allow me to move up a level on Podomatic and maybe even have the occasional live broadcasted Podomatic podcast so that you can actually join in a sort of a group discussion. So just keep that in mind.
And, you know, if we get enough, I don't see this happening, but if we get enough or if I get a really good job someday, I may upgrade from this gaming headset that I'm using to speak to you guys on. Because right now, as I understand it, I speak into this chintzy little gaming headset. It goes to Glenn's place, plays out of his speakers because we can't find a good Skype capture program. And so I probably sound pretty tinny to you people right now. And it'd be great for us to be able to find a way to up the quality of my own transmission, on my own part of this transmission.
Yes. I mean, definitely the money would not be going out to having a nice night on the town for either of us. It would go to things that would improve these podcasts to the point where they are equal to a lot of the other ones that you, I'm sure, hear and love. So just keep that in mind, folks. The PayPal button is available. I'm not demanding that anyone has to do it and I'm going to leave. I'm going to do it whether you donate or not, but it would always be a nice easing of a slight burden that's well worthwhile, but a burden nonetheless. And so on that note, so you can reach us here. If you haven't found this podcast through Podomatic, it's www.theaword.podomatic.com. And you can find me on YouTube under http://www.youtube.com/allbabiesareatheists. And make sure you put the S at the end. There's an imposter account that does not.
And if you replace All Babies Are Atheists with Bionic Dance, you can get to my YouTube channel. I have plenty of videos. I tend to put out one a day. Sometimes a little less, but still plenty for you to sink your teeth into. And though it's on hold at the moment due to a disc crash, I also have a webcomic, a sci-fi webcomic called The Adventures of Kinnear Baxter. Very much sort of a Star Wars, Star Trek, Babylon 5 kind of thing. And you can find that at kinnearbaxter.comicgenesis.com.
And to one and all, thank you for joining us, and we will see you you will hear us very soon. I figured I'd get that out eventually. Bye-bye.